This is the Freedom Fiends. And this is hour one of the Freedom Fiends. Weekend edition, broadcasting from the Wormabago 1 Mobile Command Module in the depths of Freedom Bayou, where the swamp meets the sea. And Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. You can learn more about that at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org. And my name is Ben Stone. With me is Diana and Christian. Hey, guys. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Ben. How are you? Thank you.
Fun times, huh?
Long time. When's the last time I've been on a Fiend show?
I don't remember.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Too long.
I don't think I even was on at Porkfest, so I totally missed out.
Yeah. I was listening. Typically you are.
I was in the audience yelling.
You were the year before. You were on. Yeah, so it was fun.
It's always fun. He's
the French dog poodle.
French dog poodle. That's my wrestling name.
So let's. I'm in high anticipation here. Let's not waste any time. Christian, you went to a concert, and so we wanted to have you tell us all about it. It was very heartwarming and thrilling, right?
I had a friend of mine who had a pair of tickets. So for me, it was a free concert to go see Toby Keith. Toby Keith. Obviously, I'm a big fan, and I know all of his songs. I don't even know his
name. He's kidding, people.
Well, no. So this has generated a lot of conversation between Diana and I, because Diana's like, "Oh, Christian, you don't want to go there." I'm like, "Why not? It's a country music show. It's going to be fun, right?"
Keep talking.
I think we dropped out.
No,
now
we're
back. Okay.
Yeah.
and so I was excited to go, and I was kind of warned by on the way there on my computer, and I played some Toby Keith, you know, so I could listen to.
I warned you, actually.
Well, you warned me, and then I actually listened to some of it. And in the five songs that I listened to just on the way to the concert, there were, three songs were all about America, America, USA, America. And the fourth one also had something about, you know, hey, if you're a bad guy, you know, the police is going to come and get you. And so it was all about like law enforcement, army, and strong nationalism. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be so interesting. I don't know what I'm going to do there. But I saw it kind of as a social experiment, and I learned a lot.
I was pretty much like, there is not enough booze in the world.
Well, so I drove to my friend's place. We parked my car there. It's a regular car. And we hopped in this pickup truck, which is much more appropriate. And, got some booze, got some food on the back of the pickup truck. And, this was also my first tailgating event. I had never been tailgating anywhere. So this was like, you know, such a wild day full of new adventures for me. Anyway, so we end up at the Toby Keith concert. And of course, I look around. The first thing that surprised me, and I felt heartened by that, there were a lot of Don't Thread on Me Gadsden flags.
Ah, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, not everybody flies that. And sure enough, it's another piece of cloth. But still, it's usually, you know, flown by people who have a fairly individually minded, you know, hey, don't mess with me kind of thing. And so there were a lot of those in the parking lot, and I was like, okay, this could be my crowd. Of course, there were also a lot of traditional, what is it called, the Stars and Stripe banner.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, the American flag.
The American flag. Well, it's got some other name.
Oh.
The old something. I don't know.
Star-Spangled Banner.
Star-Spangled Banner. That's the one. And anyway, so there we are in the parking lot of a Toby Keith concert, and I start observing people. And what I found out, and this was through conversations with my friend, I was pretty, my guards were up trying to make sure that I understood that, you know, these people were, you know, high nationalism, and I was not going to walk out there, you know, screaming anarchy.
I was really afraid he was going to get beaten up. I was like, please, please behave yourself, Christian.
And so in conversation with my friends, here's what came up. He said, Christian, these people might be more like you than you realize. And my friend is not an anarchist. He's just a regular, you know, a good old American boy. And I said, well, what do you mean? He says, well, you know, these guys, they don't love the government. I'm like, well, they're flying the government's flag all over the place, and they keep saying America, America, America everywhere. He says, no, no, no. They love the soldiers. They love, you know, the army, the people who actually go and put their lives
fight
on the line.
Fight for our freedoms.
Freedom. So, yeah, they, sure, they believe all that. But when it comes to government, these guys have as much, well, I would doubt that, but hatred for our governmental institutions as you do.
No.
I don't think that's
yeah,
true.
Yeah, I think it's more for them. I think for many of them, and, you know, and it's like I really try to avoid painting groups of people with a broad brush.
Yeah.
I really do try to avoid that. But in my experience, that folks like that tend to hate any sort of Democratic administration as opposed to Republican administration.
Yeah.
I feel like that more than likely, you know, these folks were all the way behind George W., you know, but now that Obama's in office, yeah, they hate the government.
Well, another point that my friend made, he also said they're not necessarily for the army. They are for the soldier. And he says there's a big distinction between the large collective bureaucratic, you know, high power control organization called the army or, you know, whatever the various branch of, you know, military killers out there. But, you know, these guys are, you know, supportive of the soldier who goes and, again, lay his life on the line. And I had to wrap my brain a little bit around that, right? The distinction between the organization and the individuals. And so I came to a conclusion. The conclusion was that I believe that a majority of the people at the Toby Keith concert are very close to be libertarians, even though they do fly a lot of national, you know, symbols and all that. And the messages are very simple. There is not a lot of philosophy being discussed at a Toby Keith concert, but the only narrative that these guys have had all their lives is the American way, right? Mm-hmm. It's God bless, and it's you know, say the pledge and all that. And so that's the only thing they know. I think if the liberty movement, whatever that is, was to come up with clean and simple narratives that respect these people's very individualistic lifestyles, we would find forgive the pun, an army of people who, again, would not, you know, necessarily push forward libertarian philosophy and thought, mm-hmm. But there would actually be a wide number of people, a large number of people out there who would actually espouse much more prominently the ideas of liberty than they do today. And I think that's only because all these guys know is public schools. And what do you do after public school? Well, I have no money, so I'm just going to join the army.
Yeah.
That's the only thing they know.
One of the things you said to me, Christian, when we were talking about this, is that you actually did compare the kind of like that group with a like the sort of hippie movement or the counterculture movement of the late 60s and early 70s. And, I'm really interested in hearing, again, you know, how you came to that.
Well, these guys are all there. Most of them are probably gun-owning, you know, pickup truck driving and front porch sitting, you know, again, good old Americans. And there is... There is a very clear sense of leave me alone that emanated from that group.
Yeah.
And while that's different than the hippie culture, I think it is a large group of people that could be, I don't want to say the word mobilized because that's so controlling, but that could be influenced over time to actually learn about, you know, liberty. And again, you got to be careful because there's also not a lot of, I didn't see any books at the concert. I had one in my bag, but nobody else seemed to be carrying any books.
You had the Adam Kokesh book, didn't you?
Yes, I did. But anyway, all that to say that I think there's a potential with that group, and I think they are closer to our ideas of liberty than we might think at first glance. That's kind of my conclusion coming out of it. I was not expecting that conclusion going into it.
How much do you think is sort of that the team spirit or team mentality?
That's what I think it is. That's what I think it is.
Yeah. No. That is a lot of it. That is, this is the parallel to the hippie movement that Diana was referring to is when you look at John Lennon, right? John Lennon was a hippie, and he was a musician, became famously popular, and through his music, he educated a large group of people. I mean, there were a lot of intellectual hippies as well, but there was just a whole lot of sheeps in the hippies as well.
Right.
And the sheeps were in the hippie movement because they loved the music, and they just went in
and
there.
The drugs.
And they smoked pot, and they made the peace sign with their hands and lit up a lighter or whatever while singing not John Lennon songs. Well, the same thing is happening there. Of course, they're flying the American flag, and they're drinking beer, but their form of education or their form of understanding of what's going on around them in the world comes through Toby Keith. So let's have I don't know who it would be, but let's have if we can come up with a popular, wildly successful libertarian peace singer that comes out and could attract that crowd.
Yeah,
that's how you help mobilize a large number of people like this. It's a social movement. In this case, it's around Toby Keith. But I saw a lot of parallels between what I saw at that concert and what you might have expected from a John Lennon speech or concert 40 years ago.
I think you're really hitting on something there, because if you think about Nima Vedati, one of the Freedom Fiends founders and sometimes co-host, Nima has made tremendous inroads in the hip hop community, and we've seen that with several other artists in the last few years, where using hip hop music to reach that audience is extremely effective. And
this is what happens when you call the cops.
Yeah,
you get your rights violated or you get shot.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's awesome.
What a powerful message that carries. So I think you're
really
on.
We should keep talking about this.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think we should keep talking about this. So.
Definitely. We'll be right back after this brief trip to the market. Stick with us.
Worms.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
Freedom Fiends.
I like Balm better than Toby Keith. This is good music right there.
Go ahead, Diane.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, we were talking about, what we were just talking about is Christian's experience at the Toby Keith concert and kind of, observing sort of the group mindset going on there. And the thing that concerns me about many folks like that, I'm reluctant to say all because I don't know those people, and I don't, I've hung out in the past with people people that kind of like have that sort of, America, go America kind of mindset and everything. And to me, it's kind of, and especially Toby Keith and his music and everything, that the message is just, it stems from a post 9/11, mindset of us versus them.
It's very status. It is very us versus them. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
And so, and it's just like, I have my doubts, and I don't like to be a pessimist either, but I just really have my doubts that a lot of those folks could really be reached, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, so with the message of liberty, sure, but with liberty with peace and, mind your own business and, let chips fall where they may kind of thing.
To me, it's propaganda, right? And that's what we're talking about here. And Toby Keith is definitely a great propaganda tool for the American government, whether he knows it or he's actually willingly doing it or not. I mean, it's his shtick. That's what he does, and he's successful at it. But to me, that propaganda, what's beautiful, quote unquote, about it is that it's very simple.
Yeah.
It's a simple message, right? It's a flag. We love it. You are an American, and we're defending the American way, and we're going to go over there and take the fight to them for what they did to us. And it is not a very complicated or deep, philosophy of nationalism here. I mean, Hitler and Mein Kampf have had a much deeper philosophy, even though just, as awful, if not worse. But this is very shallow. And what I'm saying is that there's been other successes in the past where a simple, relatively shallow philosophy could be around liberty, could be about peace. It could even be around self-defense, right?
Yeah.
Because, again, a lot of these guys over there are big on the whole self-defense. Maybe that's how we connect with them. You defend your home. Stop trying to defend and getting your kids murdered, some faraway place that you've never been. Stay home and defend your house, the man's castle, whatever the British doctrine there was, the king in their own house or something like that. Anyway, so keep the philosophy simple.
I wonder how much of that, fear of those foreigners that are going to come and make us speak German or whatever.
Yeah.
I wonder how much. I wonder how much of that is just insecurity in themselves. They literally have such a poor education, which is what we see from all government schools. They have such a poor education that they believe this myth that there are these monsters overseas or monsters at the southern border or, these monsters in the Middle East, and they just can't wait for us to lower our guard so they can run in here and take our stuff,
you know? Yep. I mean, that's what they've been indoctrinated with.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is that, Christian had an observation of kind of this group and saw some potential for, possible changing of the mind kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I would wonder what would have happened if you'd gone up to someone and said, Chris Kyle's a murderer.
Whoa.
Like if you were to say that to them, to somebody, Chris Kyle, the American sniper guy.
Oh,
yeah. If you were to walk up,
I was like, who's Chris Kyle?
Yeah. If you were to walk up to any random person there at the concert and say Chris Kyle's a murderer, you'd probably either get, just like you said, who's Chris Kyle? Possibly, depending on how much they keep up with the news or how young or old they are, kind of thing. But what would the reaction have been? That's something that I probably would have been tempted to do, and I probably would have gotten my butt kicked.
I was not going to start getting in a fight with a bunch of drunken flag waving nationalists. But see, that's the wrong approach, though. I don't want to.
I know that. I know you. But it's still the problem. I guess I just feel like that mindset is so ingrained.
I want to seduce them. I want to seduce them to a message of
woo them.
It could be a Christian message of peace, or it could be a message of individual freedom. It could be a message of protecting your own and your family. I mean, there's a lot of messages I think that would resonate with them that are at their core very libertarian.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we're hitting on something really important here.
Worms.
Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to present the 3rd Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan from August 7th through the 10th. There will be vending, discussions, presentations, all sorts of activities for children and adults, and bacon, lots of bacon. Round up your friends and family and get them registered today at miplc.org. That's miplc.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
Freedom Fiends.
Freedom Fiends.
Freedom Fiends.
So during the break, Diana was sharing some stuff about a church lesson. You want to take that,
yeah.
Diana?
Yeah, and it was actually a teaching on the ninth commandment about bearing false witness, and the way that the pastor kind of led into the whole making broad assumptions about people had to do with the whole, you know, when you do that, you do tend to, when you make broad assumptions about people, you do tend to bear false witness, because those assumptions that you have cannot possibly apply to every single person in that group. You know, and so, yeah, and so, like, and I'm very much aware of that. Like, I feel like what I'm kind of reminded of was Ron Paul and the whole Isaiah's job. You're familiar with that, Ben, right? Like how, you know, God, Isaiah was sent, and I don't remember exactly where, but he was sent. I can't remember the village or whatever he was sent to talk to them about, you know, what they were doing wrong and that type of thing. And God told him, you know, when he sent him, that, you know, they're probably not going to listen to you. No, you know, people are not going to listen to you. But there is a remnant. You know, there are going to be people where the seed of what you're saying is going to be planted, and that remnant will carry that to the next generation.
Yeah.
And so I do believe that. I believe that there's a remnant, but I also believe that sadly, that the, you know, the mindset of this country has just been so ingrained in so many people, in the majority of people. But I mean, I think, you know, as long as the message continues to be carried, and I do think the youth is way more inclined to libertarian thought than the current, you know, the current, I guess, generation in power. So that's what I learned at church.
I think reaching out to the wide masses, you know, obviously you're always going to make assumptions like that, and not everyone's going to be moved. But out of that remnant, again, you look at the hippie movement in the 60s and 70s, mm-hmm. and I mean, it grew out of something very small that just mm-hmm. became more and more popular. So we just need to latch on and find something that is small but has a lot of potential. Maybe Nima Vedadi's rap songs or something. Obviously, pop culture, you know, music and things like that have a huge amount of attraction for the youth. Mm-hmm. So you use those channels and you make peace and liberty cool again. And it's not right now, because right now all the airwaves and everything is saturated with messages of fear, war, and terrorism, and they need to understand why they need us kind of thing. And so it's really hard to get through.
You know, Carl Hess was kind of like, he was kind of in a world, he was kind of in two worlds at the same time. He was in the political, almost right-wing world. He was a speechwriter for a Republican presidential nominee in the mid-60s, and yet he was an anarchist, and he was, you know, trailed by the FBI and followed by the CIA and spied on and chased by the IRS, and, you know, and all that time he kind of had one foot in each world between the hippie movement and the anarchist movement, and he pulled it off pretty good mm-hmm. during his lifetime, and he came up with some really good stuff, and I'm not sure what there's not some lessons in there that we can learn as well, but I really do think there's a huge pool of people that are young people that are in mm-hmm. that are in that mindset of the sort of the pop country mindset, and they're chasing that because first off, what else
is
there?
Been presented with?
Yeah,
yeah, exactly, yeah. That's true.
And there is a little bit of a, you know, within the country, pop country culture, there's a little bit of rebellion in that. They even have things like some country radio station will call themselves like rebel country and stuff like that. Ooh, they're real rebels, you know. They're I mean, it's practically laughable to some of us, but in their minds, they're really bucking the system because they're not listening to whatever the, you know, the pop divas are on the other pop station. And they never stop and think mm-hmm. about the country pop that they're listening to has just been shifted using, you know, the corporations that control all the mainstream music.
they just have slightly altered the twang a little bit and given everybody a little bit of an accent to try to appeal to them, but they're being conned the whole time.
Yeah.
I have friends both on the left and the right, and it's kind of funny to what you're saying there. Everyone is thinking of themselves as the minority,
yeah,
you know, rebel group, right? I've got some leftist friends who are, you know, obviously the world is ran by, you know, white Republican males, and we got to oppose that, and we're the revolution. And you've got, you know, some people shook up with that. And when you look at it, and I'm going to make maybe the same mistake, you know, other people are doing, but the libertarians are really, it's becoming a little more mainstream right now as a label, which doesn't mean that all the
yeah,
philosophies apply.
But
everybody's trying to call themselves libertarians right now. And so I see a very big parallel there between libertarianism, or at least the perception of that label when applied to someone, you know, identifying that person as a grassroots rebel that's trying to change the system.
Yeah.
Because, you know, isn't that what Obama got elected on? You know?
Yeah,
yeah, pretty
yeah,
much,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's how American politics oscillate between the Democrat Party and the Republican Party. They swap off, you know, because when the Democrats are in power, then you see Drudge Report and you see all these right-wing people just pounding their constituents with, oh, look how terrible things are. If only we could get one of our guys in there. We're so downtrodden. We're the rebels.
Yeah.
We're the, you know, I think back in the 90s when Bill Clinton was president, the Republican leadership in Congress, they were using things like they were using imagery of the Revolutionary War, like they were revolting against the king or something, and they're offering the same thing on a different colored plate, you know?
Right, yeah. Exactly.
I was very careful there. I said the same thing. I didn't say what I was thinking. It's the same thing.
Yeah. We are on the radio, Ben.
Same stuff, different day. Same stuff, different plate.
Same brown, squishy stuff.
Yeah.
When I think about real movements of change, again, you look at how the hippie movement, maybe again, and what they had at the time. There were horrors that you could see, right? The hippie movement very much came out of the Vietnam War.
Right.
And, I mean, you saw. Awesome. And so at some point, that is so horrific. Obviously, people are going to have a reaction to it. Unfortunately, nowadays, the mainstream news is just censoring all this, mm-hmm. right? I think is it now illegal or something like this, or news outlets have been instructed not to
show
or
coffins.
Have agreed to
right.
exactly not
right.
show the coffins of American soldiers coming back, you know, dead, and that's big, right? Because now there's no cost to this war. You're
right.
not paying for it in your taxes.
Right.
This is being paid for with the Fed.
Right.
You know, maybe your grandkids are going to starve to death, but you know that's not immediately obvious to people right. who support the wars. So you don't see the consequence or the cost of it here.
Yeah.
So it's really sad.
And, you know, you saying that kind of made me think about how, you know, you mentioned that it seems that these Toby Keith fans are, you know, way more for the individual soldier than they are for the machine, you know, that they're, you know, a part of and used, you know, that look at these wasted lives,
That's
you know,
right.
look at these, you know, your brothers and your sisters, like, look at these people that have gone to die for what? I mean, what have they gone to die for? And so maybe something like that could be used, you know, I mean, I hate to say it that way, but, you know, I mean, it is an atrocity, it's a tragedy, you know, that so many young people are, you know, basically killed and in my opinion, for nothing, you know, and for this false sense of freedom, you know, which is not free at all. Freedom isn't free.
I think that's the source of their anger, too. When you do approach them with something and they take it as an insult to their brother or their sister or their cousin that lost his legs.
Right.
Or, you know, they don't take that as realizing that, no, you're in the middle of a con job. You've been mm-hmm. conned, and your cousin's legs are the cost of the con. You didn't save anybody from anything. You just threw your cousin's legs away so that these corporations can maintain their monopoly of power in the Middle East. And that's all it's about. It's about money, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it does. It's like when you challenge someone's, you know, their whole idea of the way things that they thought they were, you know, the way that they perceive them to be, and they're so, you know, invested in that point of view, that if you do challenge them, I think that's where a lot of the anger comes from, is that there's some part of them somewhere that knows you're right.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah.
Go ahead, Christian.
Go ahead, then. I was saying, a lot of the place where our good information, still, you know, realistic information comes through today is through websites and you know, like antiwar.com, or you think about the LRN.FM, the Liberty Radio Network, Mises Institute. I mean, a lot of those websites, of course, these websites do not command anywhere as much of an audience as, CNN or whatever.
Or Breitbart. You know, sometimes Breitbart has good articles, but then you read the article and you go to read the comments and you're like, oh my God.
Who's that?
Breitbart.com. It's like, it's a right conservative kind of like, website, jumping ground like Judge Report. But, some of the articles are actually really good, and they're, you know, but you look at the comments and it's just like, oh my gosh, you know, who are these people? Yeah. It's really sad.
The challenge though is that the masses are not going to bother reading. I mean, you look at antiwar.com, there's a lot of information on that front screen, right? It's way too complicated. Mises.org is way too scholastic, which is good. We need it, but it's not how the masses are going to be convinced. And I don't know, of anything right now that has like a good potential for large mass appeal. Maybe the Freedom Fiends. Mm-hmm.
You know, there was something here. I don't know if this weaves in or not, but maybe somebody will put something together from it. I was having my brother fits very much into these kind of people that we're describing here. And I was having a discussion with him. This was probably 15 years ago. And we were in his pickup truck listening to his choice of music at the time. And I said, he asked me what if I could listen to whatever music I would want to listen to, what would I listen to? And I had this song in my mind, Elizabeth Reed by the Allman Brothers. And I mentioned that. So we were playing it. We're about to run out of time, so I'm going to cut my story short. So he switched over and we were playing it. I had it with me. And about 10 minutes into it, he says, how long does this song go? And I said, that's about an 18-minute song. And it dawned on me at that moment that every song he listened to was 2 minutes 30 seconds. And if it went longer than 2 minutes 30 seconds, he couldn't listen to it.
Oh, my God.
And that said
You're
volume.
Listening to the Freedom
Well, we got to go. We'll be right back.
Invigorating alternative worms. Other shows.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Freedom Fiends on your radio. So right before the break hit, I had a thought that I was trying to complete and I didn't quite finish it. I was talking to my brother and this situation where I was listening to, I wanted to listen to the song in memory of Elizabeth Reed, which was the live version I had with me. That's like 18 mm-hmm. minutes or 22 minutes or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a long, rambling, progressive rock song with Southern tendencies to it. It was actually mm-hmm. named after a grave that two of the writers bumped into. They were in a graveyard for a family funeral, and they had been working on this song together. And they looked down, and here's this beautiful headstone in this outside Atlanta graveyard outside Atlanta. Beautiful headstone, and it said in memory of Elizabeth Reed. So that's what they named the song. So it's a nice long rambling song.
And my brother could not relate to it because it wasn't a 2 minute, 30 second snap, snap, snap in your head, out of your head, go on to the next one. Let's have another bag of French fries because we can't stop now. Give me another Pepsi. You know, we got to have, throw that away. I'm done eating that. I'm done with that. Have me another one. I got to get into the drive thru as quickly as possible. What, steak? Right. No, hand me a hamburger. You know, that whole mentality.
Steak burger.
Yeah. Yeah, we were talking about, I guess, over the break, too, about how pop music lyrics have been dumbed down a lot. And there's been a study, and on the website, the antimedia.org, it says that the study served to confirm the patently obvious. Song lyrics are the most popular genres of music are ridiculously obtuse and getting worse over time. Though this might not be a revelation, the figures are distressing indicators of both an intellectually vapid societal and cultural future, as well as its apparent inevitability. And let's see, like Andrew Palmore's of Seat Smart studied the lyric intelligence of 225 Billboard songs in the pop, country, hip hop, and rock genres.
So it's across the various music styles too.
Spent 3 or more weeks parked at the top of the charts to analyze any changes of the course of 10 years, and change there was.
So since we're talking about hippies and John Lennon, are they saying that the songs are less complicated now than Imagine? Imagine all the people.
So it says 10 years ago, the most popular songs read between a third and fourth grade level, but the inanity only increased with time, and after a five-year downward tumble ending in 2014, chart-topping hits had a reading level equivalent to second or third grade.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's pretty interesting. And actually, the what fared best was country music, and it's at a 3.3 grade level.
Well, there we go. We have our intellectual target right there.
Well, that actually reveals something about why the your typical Toby Keith fan is not going to the Mises Institute to download a 250-page PDF on why the state is what it is, or how the economy works, or why gold is sound money and why paper money is worthless.
Yeah. Well, just to switch genres. On the way back, Diana and I were driving, from a road trip a few weeks ago, and we're listening to the news, and they're talking about Lady Gaga, and how Lady Gaga was, if you look at a video of Lady Gaga, I mean, it is highly sexual, very controversial, and she's trying to rock the boat there, right? And but she came out in support of these new laws. There's I think it was referring to both New York State and California. Instead of no means no about sexual consent between teenagers, this is a yes means yes, meaning that every escalation of amory between two young partners needs to be verbally and clearly needs to be a kelu. Well, I wouldn't recommend anybody, who's an adult kissing a teenager girl. But I mean, even between teenager, to ask, can I kiss you on the neck? Can I kiss you on your cheek? And the other person needs to say yes. And anyway, so to me, that sounds absolutely crazy. And also, that there was a piece of this new legislation that they're trying to pass. I'm not sure if it's which level of government is trying to pass this, but there was a piece where they said, oh, and by the way, if you drink any amount of alcohol, you are not able to consent, and therefore, you can't even say yes. So that means that kids that are under the influence of alcohol should never be able to kiss or play with one another.
Meow, meow.
That's going to work.
Meow, 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 meow.
Well, Lady Gaga supports that,
Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back after the hour break. You're going to hear some news and some commercials and stuff, but don't let the news get you down. What was that, Diane?
No. I said all that good stuff.
Yes.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends.
please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
This is the Freedom Fiends, Hour 2, Freedom Fiends Weekend Edition, broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's Ion Canid, mounted high atop the Wormabago 1 Mobile Command Module, in the depths of Freedom Bayou where revenuers dare not tread. And Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT, no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. And you can learn more at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org. And my name is Ben Stone, and with me is Diana and Christian. And we're bouncing the signal around through Fiend Phone. So, hey, glad to be on the radio with you guys. This is a lot of fun.
Yeah, you too,
It's always fun to be on the Freedom Fiends.
For anybody that missed the first hour, we're on a lot of radio stations only on the second hour. So if you missed the first hour, get over to freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com. And about an hour or so after the show, it's up there. You can download it and listen to the whole show. So don't just survive on the last hour. We talked about some really neat stuff, music and junk, on the first hour. So be sure and download that and listen to it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, before we left for the break, we were talking a little bit about how American or popular music lyrics in America have been dumbed down over the course of the years and decades and everything. And I was referencing this article on the antimedia.org, and the title of the article is "How Popular Music Lyrics Perpetuate American Idiocy."
That's a little rough.
And we talked about how the grade level of lyrics just in the last 10 years have gone from between third and fourth grade to between second and third grade. And there was even referenced one song where it was actually below kindergartner level. Wow. Yeah. So, but then it's interesting because the article actually does go on to say, you know, it talks about, you know, the education system and how it's become the highest form of indoctrination, with teachers forced into regurgitating information so their students can pass tests rather than become innovators and original thinkers. And it talks about, it even says, you know, this woman, Catherine Liu, a film professor at the University of California, says, "We don't educate people anymore. We train them to get jobs."
Wow.
You know, and the other problem with things like this, when people, you know, are dumbing down and are not trained to think for themselves, is that you become a whole lot more not only gullible but reliant on governments.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The government comes around and says, "Well, look, we got a problem right here with whatever. Let's make a law." Because people can't think, people can't adapt to the situation. The only solution to everything is, let's make a law that's going to tell us how to behave or not to behave in a particular, you know, circumstance.
Well, I think also,
just follow the 1.5 million laws there are on the books.
I think Christian touched something in the first hour too that's really telling, and he mentioned that you got this kid's out of high school, he's not really trained to do anything, he's not taught how to think really, and so maybe he doesn't really have the monetary capabilities to go into a university and get any kind of a college degree. And maybe he's smart enough that he doesn't want to go deep into debt and, you know, and owe for the next 30 years on a college degree. So what is his choices? Right. Well, he can work in, you know, fast food, or he can go into the military. And this is almost a forced decision that's put on them, that puts them in a situation where they almost have to take that lifestyle.
Right. Yeah. And the article does say, from a political standpoint, all this dumbing down makes sense. Indoctrination creates obedience. If music and culture focus on mindless diversion and education lacks, well, education, then people lack the acuity necessary to question the absurdity of the system.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. There it is. That's a great article.
I'm going to sound really old here because when I was young, I remember songs like, you know, The Sound of
when
Silence.
When I was a young whippersnapper.
we used to climb 10 miles in each direction in the snow just to get to school. But, you know, you think of songs from like the 60s and 70s, like I mentioned Sound of Silence by Garfield and Uncle Fester or whatever.
Garfield.
Yeah, I am really old.
Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah, that's them.
Ben, you weren't a cool kid when you were a kid, were you?
But those are really
cool. We have no idea the coolness of Ben when he was when he was young.
But those were really complicated lyrics, and they told stories. You know, Arlo Guthrie back in the days would tell stories with his music, right. And even up into the 70s, you know, some Led Zeppelin songs had very intricate lyrics that told stories. Mm-hmm. You know, the Battle of Evermore is the story out one of the Tolkien battles from Helm's Deep. Is that song.
Right,
so, you know, you've got these intricate stories and intricate lyrics that you had to really listen to and pay attention to and try to figure out what they were talking about. And now it's just like, you know, but, I like big butts, but. And that's basically, and that's even an old song.
Yeah.
you know, the peace message from the Beatles. Look at the anti-establishment messages from The Who.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the bands back in the 70s had some very intellectually oriented lyrics.
Yeah, actually, the song Who Are You is amazingly, if you really think about that question, and this, I heard an interview with the guys from the band talking about that, from The Who, talking about this, and it almost drove the writer of that crazy because he got that question in his head, and it just dawned on him the power of that question, who are you? And he literally went around getting in fights in bars by getting in people's faces saying that over and over until they'd get sick of it and punch him. But if there's a depth to it.
I don't really listen to a lot of music on the radio. I mean, I definitely, I guess if I do listen to the radio, I listen to the more alternative stations. And I do listen to NPR, whatever. I can't pick up LRN on my radio in the car, so, and I don't have Bluetooth or any of that stuff. I just have a really hard time with it. It's not interesting anymore. Yeah, I'm old enough to remember what music was like. I mean, even, you know, despite disco. Disco was fun to dance to, but I think that was probably the beginning of the dumbing down of lyrics
I would even, so you mentioned NPR. NPR probably style itself as probably one of the most intellectually, you know, deep, you know, deep coverage of news events and all that. But when you listen, and I do listen to it once in a while as well, to try to understand, you know, how other people think. But when you listen to NPR, they will talk, you know, a lot about a particular topic, whatever it is. But notice how they very, very rarely go down to the root.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's you know, you look at a tree and it's all about striking the root, right? Mm-hmm. And you can spend your whole life, you know, just cutting the branches and hacking at, you know, one of the main trunks or whatever. But until you go to the root, you're never really getting to the bottom of things. Yeah. And are never
no, of course
gets
not.
To the bottom
no,
of
no,
things.
No, you know, any problems that they, you know, present, the answer is always the government. It's always the government.
That's right.
I mean, even if they're unhappy with the government, it's still, you know, the government needs to change so that it can fix this problem kind of
reform.
Thing. Yeah. So,
yeah. You know, this is
scary.
This whole line of discussion kind of this is a good opportunity for me to give a shout out for the Dangerous History Podcast. My friend CJ over there that does that is really does a good podcast. But he did a show, I guess it's been weeks ago. I'm not sure exactly how long it's been. Talking about the counterculture of the 60s and relating that to us now and what we do, and that we are kind of the current the version of the counterculture. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the same way that they had a message, we've got a message like that. The difference is their message was horribly flawed in the 60s. It was essentially, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and, oh, yeah, peace, if we can get that, too.
Right.
But, and then, you know, he didn't really go into this, but it's something I've talked about a lot on my old podcast. The whole counterculture movement was killed with the stroke of Richard Nixon's ink pen when he eliminated the draft. It was like,
you just
deflated the whole thing. You took everything away. And I worry sometimes about the current liberty environment that, you know, there's a very heavy wave to legalize pot state by state by state. And this is going off something I think Bob Murphy told me several years ago. Was that if we ever seriously become a threat to them, they will simply legalize pot on a nationwide basis, and it will kind of kill a large portion of our movement, because a lot of the people mm-hmm. are just, I mean, that's they're one topic people, they're one issue people. And you just kill that one issue, and it just deflates a lot of the support.
I came to liberty much more from a peace perspective rather than anti-war, rather than anti, you know, drug war, I guess.
Yeah.
So I think our movement has multiple legs to stand on right mm-hmm. now. It's not a single topic kind of attractor.
Yeah.
So. I mean, they would need to discredit peace, which could totally be done. I mean, you know, you look at how America is becoming militarized.
Yeah.
All mm-hmm. the police, you know, across the U.S. are becoming like little armies. Mm-hmm. All you need is you know, a couple of bad events again on American soil.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the police comes to the rescue with their Bearcats and all that. And suddenly our little message of non-aggression and all that is going to be discredited, you know, pretty quickly as well.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing, too, about the legalization of pot. I think that just legalizing pot across the nation, or having it be like federally legalized on the federal level, I mean – all that, I think that what that'll ultimately be about is money. I mean, that's just going to be, they're going to recognize that there's a lot of tax revenue to be had from the legalization of marijuana. And I still think that could still present an issue. That could still be something that we could, or, you know, as libertarians could rally around. You know, it's not about making money for you guys. It's about decriminalizing this plant. You know, the same as tomatoes are not criminalized kind of thing. So
you need a license for that.
I don't screw government permission for stuff. I mean,
pipcot.org.
Stick with us. We'll head away to the market for a moment, but we'll be right back.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Meow meow.
Meow
meow. Meow meow.
Freedom Fiend. So we're going to be losing one of our co-hosts today. Christian Aww. Has a life and has things he has to do other than be on the radio hanging out with us all day.
I love being on the radio and hanging out
it's
with
fun.
You
fun. Radio is fun.
But I do have way too many jobs, and one of them is calling.
But before we let him go, we can kind of have a pre-redemption in the third act on the stuff that we've been talking about. You know, Christian mm-hmm. went to, if you just logged in or if you just tuned in, Christian went to a country music show.
Toby Keith.
Yeah.
And we had some observations. Be sure and hear that in the first hour if you haven't already. And we really, you know, I think what we're really trying to say in this whole thing is that there is real hope in talking to these people, and there's a huge audience there that is just ripe for hearing about the truth of what the government is really like, and, you know, what you can do about it, and how you can interact peacefully without worrying about, you know, these invaders from someplace else or whatever.
Right. But I think the other big part of the message through, again, my experience there at the Toby Keith concert, where the lyrics are very simple. This is not complicated. It's about America. And and Diana was reading an article from the antimedia.org that also talks about how in popular music are today even, you know, dumber than they've ever been. So the message for us, you know, who care about peace and liberty, you know, we need to find delivery mechanisms and delivery channels for our message, but we also need to simplify our message. It needs to be so simple, Lady Gaga can sing it, you know, while dancing on TV kind of thing.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I would have to say of anybody out there, Lady Gaga's lyrics are probably a little more intellectual than the average. Maybe she's more on a sixth grade level.
Yeah. but simplifying our message and, you know, communicating our message through channels that have mass appeal, like radio, and other things like this. It's you know, we need to do more of that so that we reach more people with a very simple message that hopefully, if anything, get someone to at some point question the assumptions, and then maybe do a little bit of research and find out, you know, that the truth is not quite what they always thought it was.
Yeah.
You know, it's simplicity, I think, is really important, too, because there's something that libertarians have been accused of that I'm knowledgeable of all the way back into the 70s. And that was that as soon as you start talking to a libertarian, they start referencing, you know, 25 different giant volume books that you have to read right now. Otherwise, you're never going to, you know. And to tell you the truth, your average person is not going to come up and pick up an 800-page book by some obscure Russian author. And
you know. You haven't read Rothbard and Mises?
Well, a lot of these are really small books, though, like The Law.
Yeah,
or Human Action, Man, right. Economy, Estate. Yeah. Those are like hundreds and hundreds of pages.
Yeah. Yeah, and there are, you know, so many of those are available online for free.
That one is small.
Also, I'll tell you something else is short little YouTube videos. You know, I think Larkin Rose and several others have done several short ones. There's one that Tom Woods did that's about The Tale of the Slave by Robert Nozick. And it's like a 3-minute YouTube video with Tom Woods narrating it. And it just has such a powerful message in it. That I think more and more that
I've never seen that video.
Oh, yeah, it's great. I'll put a link in today's show notes for it.
Well, yeah, and not only that, you know, just to kind of, I mean, I guess give a little shout out to Tom Woods. You know, his podcasts are 30 minutes long. You know, they're not that long at all. And there's tons of information in those very short podcasts. I love Tom Woods. He's one of my favorites.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
So I think.
I have a little.
Go ahead.
I have a little anecdote with Tom Woods. He came to a Nullify Now conference in North Carolina about a year ago. And at the beginning of the conference, the organizers, they say, hey, we would like to. So Nullify Now is a group that is trying to promote states' rights so that the states can nullify federal regulations and laws. And so the conference starts, and the organizer, I was there with, you know, another couple of friends, and the org says, let's start with a Pledge of Allegiance. And everybody in the room gets up and puts their hand on the heart and goes through the pledge. And I sit down. I'm not standing up for that thing, right? So, and the little lady behind me, like a little Tea Party lady, you know, she's tapping me on the shoulder and, you know, motioning for me to get up and remove my hat, and this is not proper. And at the break, we were talking, and she just couldn't understand why I didn't want to get up. And she settled for the fact that, oh, you're Canadian, that's why. At the end of the day, Tom Woods was there as a keynote speaker. He called everybody out. He said, you guys, really, the Pledge of Allegiance? Why did you do that? I felt vindicated.
Way to go, Tom.
I love that story.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Freedom Fiend. And we lost Christian, but I'm Ben. I'm still here.
No, he's still alive. Yeah, he's still alive. He just had to go. I love that story, though. I love this. I mean, I'm so impressed by that story.
Wasn't that great?
And what bravery it takes to you know, kind of go against the crowd in that respect, because there's a lot of pressure in those kind of situations. Just and been in a situation like that in a while. I'd like to think that I would follow my conscience and not stand up, but you know, definitely kudos to Christian. I guess in a way it's like he didn't grow up with that kind of nationalistic fervor, despite being from Canada. I mean, they just don't have that same level that the U.S. has.
Good
on Tom Woods for totally vindicating him, for real.
And Tom wasn't always like that. Tom was at one point in time very right wing, very nationalistic. He came to this slowly, learning the process.
Yeah. And you know, it takes some of us longer than others. You know, it took me a long time. I kind of believed the hype about libertarians being, you know, tinfoil hat wearing kind of. And now I'm like proudly wearing my tinfoil hat.
Well, I was talking last week with, I think it was the show that I was talking with Nima about the unreliability of eyewitnesses, and I was talking about how we develop things that we believe, whether or not they're actually based on any facts or evidence or anything.
Right.
I had a story that I wanted to fit in last week, and I didn't get to, so I wanted to fit it in this week and talk about it for a second.
Okay.
And this was years ago. This happened in, I guess, about 1986. I had a real good friend who had a relative, and I can't remember exactly what relationship there was, but I think it was an uncle or something like that, that was about to turn 100 years old. And he wasn't going to be able to get there for the relative's birthday, so he took his kids. And he went there. He had a long weekend away from work, so he took his kids and he went there for the long weekend, and he spent 3 days with this relative, just letting his kids talk to him and talking to him himself and just trying to, you know, get the experience of talking to somebody who was born in the 1880s. I mean, you just think about that.
Wow, I know.
I mean, this is a guy who would have been a teenager when the Wright brothers first
the Wright brothers, yeah.
Yeah. It's just crazy. Imagine that. Yeah. He would have been too old to go into World War I, you know?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, yeah.
So my friend talked to him, and let me just predicate this by saying that the guy had no reason to lie to my friend. When I tell what I'm about to tell, I 100% believe the guy was being as honest as possible. He was just mistaken. So my friend asked him, they had been there the whole weekend, and one of the final things that he asked him, he said, what, you know, you've seen so many changes. You've seen all these things happen over the years. Men go to the moon and, you know, all this kind of stuff. What would you say is the biggest difference between now and when you were a child? And the guy sat there for a second and he said, the color. He said, when I was young, everything was pretty much gray. He says, now, he says, you buy a toaster and you can have your choice of six or eight colors of the toaster. You buy a shirt at the store and you can buy a shirt in any color that you can imagine. You can buy a shirt in that color. And, you know, you want anything. Everything is so colorful. Houses are colored, are different colors, and you know, color is everywhere. And I thought that when my friend first told me that story, I thought, oh, wow, you know. And then as time went by, I thought, there's something seriously wrong with this guy's story. And as I learn more and more about architecture and I learn more about other things, I found out that he was entirely wrong. Victorian houses in the late 1800s were very colorful.
Very colorful, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They had they had ornate trim. I mean, this is what the characteristics of the Victorian houses. A lot of scroll work on all the woodworking and very elaborate
the turrets.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
All that kind of stuff.
Beautiful, beautiful, and bold colors. Actually, old Victorian style houses that are painted their original colors are called painted ladies.
Because, painted ladies,
Yeah, because they're so beautiful and they're bold colors and everything. And women's dresses around 1900, women's dresses, they had all kinds of colors and fabrics. They had, you know, if you think about in the 1920s during the so-called flapper time frame when jazz was big and there was flapper music and flapper dancing and there was the Charleston and all these kind of things.
Right.
Women's clothing were very beautiful and very colorful. There are you can go to these antique stores and see clothing from that time frame, and it's some of the most beautiful clothing that women have ever had. Much and in many ways, much better than you know what women wear today. And so I thought about this, and I thought, why is this guy so wrong? How could he be so wrong? And then as the years went by, it dawned on me that his memory had changed, had adjusted, because he had seen so many black and white movies over the years.
Oh, wow.
That he remembered. He saw the world in black and white on Hollywood movies. And so he remembered the world in black and white that he actually lived. And this is a way that the mind works. It takes information it has and it puts it together, and that's how your memories are. Your memories are not necessarily accurate. Your memories are based on little pieces of information that your mind puts together in order to make sense of things.
Right. And it fills in your brain fills in the gaps.
Yeah, exactly. So this guy, in a sense, this guy had, by not being vigilant to guard his memories, he had allowed popular media, movies, television, you know, photographs, he had allowed all those things to steal the color out of his memory because he had not been vigilant with his own mind. And so this is one of the things I wanted to emphasize, is to be vigilant with your mind and to make sure that you own your mind and to make sure that you do not allow anything into your mind that's going to alter reality and bend it and twist it to somebody else's perceptions of reality. You keep the colors, no matter how old you get, keep the colors of your youth in your mind. And now I want to just present something really bold as we're wrapping up our second hour here. We've still got the redemption in the final act coming.
I can't wait to hear. I'm so excited now.
Now, there's a general perception, and if you talk to people in what is generally called the libertarian movement or the liberty movement or any of these different labels, there's a general belief that it all started with Ron Paul in the 2008 campaign. And pretty much, you know, almost anybody you talk to is going to give you the story that, oh, yeah, I came to this way of thinking by way of Ron Paul. And this is the standard story that is repeated over and over and over and over. And yet, I want to throw some facts out real quick. I was inspired to think about this from an old Lou Rockwell podcast from several weeks ago where Lou actually talked to Ron Paul, and they were talking about the first major rally that Ron Paul went to in the 2008 presidential run-up, and that was at the University of Michigan. Ron Paul showed up there, and there were thousands of kids, and they were chanting, "In the Fed, in the Fed." And this was before Ron Paul wrote the book In the Fed. And Ron Paul was inspired for the title of his book by the chant that the University of Michigan kids were chanting, In the Fed. It didn't come from Ron Paul. It came from the kids at the University of Michigan. Now, So Ron Paul says he was blown away by this. He mentioned Rothbard and he mentioned Mises in the speech, and the kids would go wild with cheers, and he couldn't figure it out. How do these kids know about Rothbard? How do these kids know about Mises? And here's why. Because they were already there before Ron Paul came on the stage.
Oh, wow.
Now I want to throw out some actual facts here. Mises.org went online in 1995. I found Mises.org in the year 2000 when I was looking about stuff about the gold standard. Also, the year 2000 had a tech bubble that I've lost a bunch of money in, and I wanted to learn about the bubble. So I went. Yeah. I found Mises.org, and that's how I found out about this stuff. Mm-hmm. LRC, the LouRockwell.com, was established in 1999. I found them in the year 2000. The Free State Project was founded in 2001.
Yeah, yeah.
Free Talk Live started in 2002. Larkin Rose went to prison in 2005. Molyneux started his Free Domain radio show in 2005. Peter Schiff gave warnings of the housing bubble in 2005. Peter Schiff was on Fox News in 2006, 2 years before before most people knew who Ron Paul was. In 2006, Walter Block publicly expressed his support for the Free State Project. 2006. In 2006, I was on, and I'm not putting myself in the category with Walter Block and these other people, but in 2006, I was on FARC.com as one of the Photoshoppers for that website, which I don't recommend it to anybody, but at the time, that was one of the things that I was trying to do to reach out. And I was I was going into Photoshop contests as often as possible to try to tilt the conversation towards a libertarian veined conversation. I was trying to put as many Photoshops out with libertarian memes and libertarian thought as possible in 2006. And I was growing a big enough following at FARC.com that I angered the founder of FARC.com, and he and I got into a big thing. Then that's all private, and I won't go into it, and you know.
Right.
But I was making enough of an impact that I essentially got chased away from FARC.com in 2006 before Ron Paul. Actually, I think it was 2007 when we had the conflict. But anyway, what else? Joel Winters was the first Free Stater to become elected to the New Hampshire House of Representatives in 2006. Ron Paul didn't start his campaign until August of 2007. And if you even the idea of a Tea Party, a lot of people in the Ron Paul movement recognize that Ron Paul started the Tea Party stuff that has since been taken over by the Koch brothers and Rick Santelli and all that that came in much later. Yeah, they stole the whole idea of the Tea Party, but that was Ron Paul. So rather than giving credit where it doesn't go, I will credit Ron Paul with doing great things, including getting the Tea Party movement started. But own your own mind and realize that these things have been around a while.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Hey, this is some Squizzcar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1 1/4 inch. Now they're 1 3/4 inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Freedom Fiends.
Yeah.
I'm Ben Stone with Diana. Yeah. We're wrapping this up. So I wanted to emphasize that I'm not bashing Ron Paul. Ron Paul has done tremendous things for our cause.
Yeah.
And I appreciate him. I appreciate the great works that he's done and the books that he's read. I actually are written. Mm-hmm. I have several of his books and have bought quite a few and handed them out for free to people. So, you know, I'm a supporter of many of the things that Ron Paul has taught over the years. And I voted for Ron Paul in 1988. So, you know, but here is my point in trying to take down this giant image of Ron Paul, this massive edifice that's built up about Ron Paul birthing the Liberty Movement in 2008 or whatever. Mm-hmm. It comes back to the great man theory. When I first established the Bad Quaker website back in 2011, I put up faces on there of people who were an inspiration to me, and one of them was Herbert Spencer. And one of the things that I wanted to use the Bad Quaker podcast to get across was Herbert Spencer's work in debunking the great man theory. And I see so many people who are libertarian or ANCAP or, you know, agorists or voluntarists or all the different groups like this that fall into the trap of latching onto a great man. And rather than having a hero and rather than piling upon that hero, that great image, that idol, rather than piling upon them glory that they do not deserve, realize that it is us ourselves that are making this thing what it is. This, you know, I hate to call it a liberty movement because I really don't like that phrase, but whatever this thing of ours is, whatever this thing of ours is, it's us. It's each and every one of us. It's not the Molyneux and it's not the Ron Pauls and it's not these great men. And I'm not saying they're bad or that we should hate them or whatever. I'm saying they are not gods. They are not idols.
Right.
They are just men like the rest of us, you know, and women.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I do think that I think to some degree it's human nature to look for this, you know, this wise, great leader, you know, that espouses, you know, the values that we have and to follow that person and think that they can do no wrong and that type of thing. And I just think it's human nature. I think that we naturally have, or human beings naturally have, a herd mentality and, you know, are looking for a shepherd of sorts. I balk at that myself personally as an individual. You know, I definitely try not to look at, you know, people who are prominent in some way, shape, or form, whether they're like, you know, Hollywood celebrities or if they're, you know, the celebritarians, you know, those type of people. Yeah. I mean, it's just like they're human beings just like we are, you know, and there's nothing about them that makes them any different other than their ability to create a followership, a fellowship, anyway, for them to create a following, and it takes a certain amount of charisma, but that doesn't make them, you know, any more, and, you know, you're going to follow somebody right over a cliff if you follow them too closely.
Yeah, and we have to be very careful with that because, you know, I think that the wonderful thing about individualism and, you know, that sort of that rebel spirit that says nobody's my boss, I'm the boss of me, and, you know, that it's a wonderful thing that can keep the individual safe from that herd mentality. And I know, you know, we do kind of want to have a hero. We always kind of want that. I think back in my own life, the one hero that I had for years and years and years, I met him And then I realized, you know, I saw all the warts and I realized what he was really like. Yeah. And I think that was one of the things that caused me to realize that, you know, heroes are not the solution. We have got to find the answers in ourselves. And liberty comes to us with us taking steps, with us doing it, with us making it work, not looking to some savior to come out, you know, and pass the laws that are going to set us all free or whatever. It's in us finding that freedom on our own.
Yeah, I just, you know, I see so much of that, you know, that fallacy, I guess, in people looking to the government to give them permission to do things that should not be illegal in the first place, like marrying the person that you love, you know, to consenting adults, you know, wanting to create a union. Everybody's all excited that the government has given its permission to do that legally. And it's like, wait, why do we have to ask permission to begin with, you know?
Anyway. Diana, thanks for
seeing the holes. And thank you, Ben. Yeah,
it's been fun having the show. Be sure and tell Christian I really liked having a show with him.
I will. Yeah, it was. I like having him on too. So it's fun. He and I are talking about doing a podcast at some point.